Okay, so thank you very much. So I thank the organizer for inviting me here again, another time in Santa Barbara, great place. So you've seen the announcement. Actually, that's some school or workshop school we're organizing in Cargès, which is a little island in Corsica, some island of France, a very nice place. And that's going to be in the beginning of September, first 2 weeks. And we're organizing this workshop with Eddie Ardon, Roderick Mosner, and Nicolas Rognot, who should be here, but he's not there. He should be here. Okay, so let me start with the talk. So I'm very happy, actually, to share this session with Frank. And so, you know, in condensed matter physics, we usually start with model Hamiltonians for correlated systems, which are very hard problem when, you know, quantum Monte Carlo technique do not apply, and this is, you know, often the case. But we are helped by something, which is the fact that the ground state of these physical Hamiltonian are, in a way, weakly entangled. So it means that usually they follow the area law, and this is very helpful, in particular for using, you know, numerical techniques like, you know, DMRG or more modern tensor network techniques. But it's also very useful if you think of constructing, you know, simple wave functions, and that characterize, you know, these different states of matter. And this is the approach I'm going to follow. So here I will not talk about Hamiltonian, but I will talk about wave functions, and I will use the tensor network formalism to compute properties of this wave function, and I will illustrate this in three cases. The first case is very simple RVB spin liquid, some resonating valence bond states on the Kagome lattice. Then the second illustration would be how you can we can actually construct topological spin liquid by applying a magnetic field. So that would be some kind of U1 symmetric spin liquids. And I will end the story by showing you that it's also possible, and this is our first attempt to construct topological spin liquids which are chiral and which have chiral edge modes. So these works have been done in collaboration with Norbert Schur, Ignacio Sirac, and David Perez Garcia. We were there in this meeting previous week, but they all left, so I'm just alone now. And there are a number of papers about that. Okay, so what are we interested in? We are interested in spin liquids that are some state which actually go beyond the order parameter paradigm. So these systems we're looking for don't have any broken symmetry, neither a local order. So they might think, you might think them as, you know, kind of vegetable thing, but actually they are not, and it has been, you know, emphasized in the recent years that there is a key property which is topological order, and in particular those systems have a ground state degeneracy which depends on the topology of space. So there would be different degeneracy, for example, on those two on a torus or on a sphere. So how can we detect them? And that's a little bit the topic of the talk. But before I go to the wave function approach, let me mention that one of the best candidates so far for, you know, observing a spin liquid is this spin 1/2 Heisenberg quantum antiform magnet on the Kagome lattice. So Kagome lattice is a lattice of corner-sharing triangles, 2D lattice of corner-sharing triangles. And it has actually three sides per unit cell. And this material, which is the bursmucide, has spin 1/2 degrees of freedom on the side of this lattice. And there have been numerical evidence based on DMRG, state-of-the-art DMRG calculation in recent years, strongly suggesting that the ground state of this Heisenberg model is actually a spin liquid, a gapped spin liquid, with a gap in the spin excitation. Now, there is a very simple representation of such a state on the Kagome lattice which has been proposed long ago by Fazekas and Anderson, which is this resonating Hertzsprung wave function. And in many respects, it is very similar to the RK wave function that was introduced by Mazakis on Monday. But there are a number of differences. So the state is actually an equal wave superposition of these nearest neighbor singlet coverings on the lattice. So like the RK wave function, on every side, there is just one singlet attached to it, and exactly one. Now, the differences with the RK wave function is that now this wave function has spin degrees of freedom on the sides. So it's a singlet state. And the other difference is now we are on a Kagome lattice. We mean that we have, you know, half integer spin per unit cell, which means that in this case, we can expect topological order. So this state, actually, it's very easy to see that you can have topological sectors. If you put this state on the torus, for example, you have topological sectors. And the way to view this is just to make some cut in the vertical or horizontal direction and count the number of dimers. And you can see that this number, the parity of the number of dimers you cut is conserved when you go in the vertical or in the horizontal direction. So basically, you have two parities, and you have by this way you can construct four topological sectors, and you expect that the local property of the state does not depend on the topological sector you are in. One can rephrase this topological sector if you consider very long cylinder instead of being on the torus. And if you start with one of these states, what you can do to construct the other topological sector is to insert some lines. So for example, what you can do is to insert a spin-on line, which means that you take a line of dimers and you translate a line of dimer by one unit. So you will create a spin-on at the boundary. And you will change the parity of the number of dimers along the vertical cut. Another way also is to insert a Vison line, which means basically to insert some operator which is counting the number of dimers you cut and associating a weight plus or minus one depending on the parity of the number of dimers you cut. So these are very simple ways, and this is very similar to the toric code construction. So this state can be you expect this state is actually in the same class as the toric code, but with a big difference now. It's a SU2 invariant state, and instead of being some kind of fixed point with a zero correlation length, you might expect it as a finite correlation length. So this is very different from a trivial insulator. And an example of a trivial insulator is this Affleck, Kennedy, Leap, Tasaki spin liquid. This AKLT construction you can do, for example, on the same Kagome lattice. So here I show a Kagome lattice, but now instead of taking spin 1/2 Hilbert space on the side, I take spin 2. So if I have spin 2 on a lattice which has coordination four, I can actually split my spin 2 into four spin 1/2. So this spin 1/2 object will be some kind of virtual states around each side. And what I can do with this virtual state, I can just construct the maximally untangled pair state on the bonds by making singlets on the bonds. So this state, the product of singlet is not untangled, it's just a product of singlets. But then what I can do is, to get the everything untangled, I can just project the 2 to the 4 space onto the fully symmetric spin 2 subspace. Okay, so that's a projector, and then I get a state which basically is unique. I mean, there's one way of doing that, and it doesn't have topological order. It just have one state in contrast with the RBB. So there's just one sector in a way. So now what is nice is that these type of state, you can recast them in terms of the a projected untangled pair state construction, which is the type of tensor network which have been introduced in the previous weeks. One way, so maybe this is a way slightly different from what Ignacio Sirac, how Ignacio Sirac introduced it. What you can, one way of presenting that is that to say that now if I take the AKRT state, I basically have four virtual states component around my site. And so these would be some virtual degrees of freedom. And then I create, between two sides, I construct this maximally entangled pair state, which are these singlet states. And at the end of the day, I project on the spin 2 manifold, which is my physical space. So all this operation here you can view as a tensor, where I have this physical degree of freedom, which is my spin 2 component. And then I have my virtual spin 1/2 on the side, so that that index here is just 0 or 1. It corresponds to spin up and spin down. So that's actually a d equal 2. This letter d is a number of the dimension of the bonds. It's a very important quantity because this is what matters in the numerical calculation. And when it's small, it's very good because you can do a lot of things. Now, the RVB is a little bit different because if the RBB, you need to project on the spin 1/2 subspace, which is my physical subspace. And with a four spin 1/2, you cannot do that. So you are basically forced to introduce another component, which is spin 0 component. So the representation of the bond would be 1/2 plus 0 instead of being just 1/2. And then now you can project on the spin 1/2 physical subspace by doing that. So there is a little more complication, which is now this is a d equals 3, three virtual states on the here, describing the tensor elements. But it's still small, and you can do a lot of things. So the way to a convenient way to work with this wave function is actually to use the cylinder geometry. So I can put my tensors on a cylinder like that. So here I show the example of the square lattice. And formally, what this picture means is that this picture corresponds to the coefficient of the wave function. So in principle, I have an exponential number of such coefficient, which I could obtain by contracting these tensors. So I could contract the virtual variables on the bonds for each set of physical variable. But this is a very complicated problem, and in practice we don't do that. We have techniques actually to based on this transfer matrix where we take the ground state and the ket and the bra, we just take two layers of this, and then we use conventional techniques of StatMech to get observable or entanglement entropies or whatever. And then this allows us also to right away take the limit of infinite cylinder in the horizontal direction because somehow we just get the fixed point of the transfer matrix. So the important thing here, just to remember, is that we actually don't calculate this exponential number of coefficients. We just use this transfer matrix approach. Okay. So now there are two possible routes with PEPs. One route is to use simple PEPs and ZATs to investigate different properties of system, and that would, we're trying to convince that these give a conceptual understanding of the property of the system. Another way is to use PEPs to construct competitive ANSATs for microscopic model, and this is a much heavier technicalities in a way. But that's for simulation of real material. So that can be done, but I'm not going to follow this route. I'm going to...
What's the difference between simple and optimized? What do you mean by that?
What?
What's the difference between simple and optimized steps?
Oh, here, what you want to do is you want to, compute to establish a variational ansatz for your microscopic Hamiltonian. So you need to have some kind of optimization scheme and to crank up the bond dimension as much as you can to get as good variational energies as you can. So you see what I mean by optimize. It means you want to crank up the bond dimension and to optimize the variational energy with some scheme. So now, if I go back to the RVB wave function, this formalism is very easy, actually, to construct the topological ground state. So I can actually play with a boundary condition, so with the parity of the number of, for example, of 2. So 2 are these the index for these spin 0 state. So that will so I have 2 possibilities, the even odd boundaries, and I can also insert some Vison operator on the horizontal direction that counts the number of bounds. And in this way, I can construct my 4 topological states. And for example, I can calculate for each of them, I can calculate the expectation value of the Heisenberg term, for example. I can look at, you know, how good is it for the Heisenberg model. And what you see is that these 4 ground state energy, they all converge to the same value as expected, because, you know, locally these states are just indistinguishable. And from this figure, I can actually extract 2 characteristic energy scale, which actually correspond to the physical process of, you know, creating a pair of Vison or a pair of spinon that goes around the cylinder and just measure whether there is a line, a flux line, or a Vison line in between.
So you prepare these simple caps.
Yeah, I do exactly what.
Sectors and evaluate it in a with respect to the standard Heisenberg.
Exactly. I just construct these 4 guys. Okay, and then I just calculate some local observable, which is just this S dot S. Okay.
Sorry, I couldn't figure out the distinction between this psi plus and psi minus full ground.
Here?
Yeah.
Oh, here. It's just that the here you have inserted a Vison line. So this state is basically the sector. I mean, each time this operator, which is a string operator, counts the number of 2 on the bounds. And if there is an even number of 2, you just do nothing. And if there's an odd number, just multiply the you know, the wave function by minus 1. So it's like inserting a Z2 flux.
E and O
is a parity of the number of virtual 2 states on the, you know, so here I put a 0 instead of 2, so I have an odd number of 2, and here I have an even number of 2. So it's basically, you know, counting the number of dimers on the boundary. As simple as that. Okay, so then I can, you know, analyze this, you know, the scaling, all these energy scale, and I can extract these 2 energies. And then I can do is, for example, plot in a semi-log plot. So this is a log of this energy difference as a function of the perimeter of the cylinder. And you see beautiful straight line from which you can extract some coherence lengths for the spinon and Vison excitation. And here I've put one point that Steve White gave me, which is obtained by DMRG. On smaller cylinders, and you see that it's more or less same order of magnitude, more or less agreed. Yeah, so this is a DMRG people notation. So this is some orientation of the Kagome lattice, with respect to the axis of the cylinder. So this is the orientation where you have left and right triangles. So you see that the point here is that with this wave function, we can actually go to much bigger, you know, perimeter. I mean, we can go to this YC20, and I'm not sure. I don't think PMRG, they can go up to here, maybe. So the interesting thing is that actually the coherence length for the Vison and the spinon can be extracted, and turns out to be quite short. Now, what you can do also, you can compute the entanglement spectrum, and the property here of the PETs is that there is some kind of holographic framework. So it might be not exactly the same holographic property that other people use, but let me explain. So what you want to do is you take your cylinder, you cut in 2 as usual, and you want to calculate the reduced density matrix on the left side, for example, by tracing out the degrees of freedom on the right side. Actually, you can show that this reduced density matrix, which lives on the left part, so it's a two-dimensional, you know, density matrix, can be actually is related via an isometry that maps, you know, this two-dimensional part on a one-dimensional part, and the operator here that has the same spectrum as this reduced density matrix is an operator that actually acts on the virtual degrees of freedom on the edge. Okay, and here is a construction of this operator. You just actually take the transfer matrix by putting, you know, ket and bra, and you just iterate from infinity to some boundary here, and that gives exactly this operator that acts on the boundary of your system. So it's really mapping, you know, two dimension on one dimension, and this formula is basically exact, and it's also practical because you can compute this operator and the entanglement spectrum. So this operator, for example, since it's a positive operator and it has trace one, you can write as, you know, exponential of some minus some Hamiltonian. And by this way, you can, you know, define some entanglement Hamiltonian that following, you know, Lee and Haldane suggestion. And what is very interesting is that you can, to my opinion, you can see that this boundary Hamiltonian, in the case of this topological phase, have a very simple form. The spectrum of this Hamiltonian has eigenvalues which are just infinite, which are just pushed to infinity, which means that the weight of the reduced density matrix have zero weight for half of the Hilbert space. So it means that this guy is just supported by half of the Hilbert space and only the non-zero eigenvalue sector of the reduced density matrix. So this has to do exactly with the topological sector you are in. Okay. And then when you analyze this guy, you see that actually beside this projector that projects you on this non-zero eigenvalue sector of the reduced density matrix, it's multiplied by a local Hamiltonian. And in the case of the toric code, this local Hamiltonian is just the identity. It's just a projector. It has zero correlation lengths. But here, this local Hamiltonian is a bit more complicated, and you can actually analyze it. And you, so here, what I do is I expand this Hamiltonian in a basis of operator, and I compute the weight of the various n-body terms as a function of the number of terms in the in the expansion. And you see this is a semi-log plot, and you see that actually these weights decay exponentially fast. So this is not the identity, but this is a local Hamiltonian with, you know, exponentially decaying terms at long distance.
What is this?
Oh, the black, this circle, I should have removed it, sorry. This is a projector here you have. So you, this projector is a strange beast. You can expand it in terms of basis of operator and compute the weight, and you see that this guy has, you know, weight at, you know, on the n-body term with the maximum number of terms. Okay, so this guy actually is a product of, you know, this beast, which is extremely long range, because that's a projector, times some local Hamiltonian. So this projector is universal, but this local Hamiltonian is not universal. It depends on the state.
Sorry, I think I probably missed something earlier, but the, yes, the local Hamiltonian, it's the way you construct it, it's intrinsically 1D here?
Yeah, everything is 1D here because, you know, the the way we construct it is by doing exactly that. So we have this transfer matrix, and then we iterate the transfer matrix up to, you know, its fixed point. And that's exactly this 1D Hamiltonian you are left with. Okay, so that's this Hamiltonian is basically constructed from the leading eigenvalue of the transfer matrix. The leading eigenvector of the transfer matrix.
I'm just trying to understand if I was just given the wave function and just by hand somehow trying to construct through a wave, it would live on the entire half space.
Exactly. Right? So here, that's
unitarily transforming it to the boundary.
Exactly. So that's a property of a PEPS. Each time you have a PEPS, you can do that. So basically, you can, you know, use this. I mean, construct this isometry that maps you know, this object that lives on the left side, something that lives on the boundary. And it lives, this object lives on the physical degree of the left side, and you transform into something which lives on the boundary and acts on the virtual degrees of freedom. Okay, so these guys are really the virtual degrees of freedom. So here I have really three states per site. Okay. So if you want,
so your this effective H is in this three-dimensional.
Yeah, it's like a TJ. It's like a bosonic TJ model. It has three sides, you know, that spin up, spin down, and holes. And it's like a bosonic TJ model. And it has longer range interaction, but they decay very fast. And all the property of the wave function you recover on this boundary Hamiltonian. You know, the wave function is spin symmetric, it's a singlet. So this Hamiltonian is invariant under SU2. Yes.
So the boundary state are not necessarily orthogonality is set by the caps itself. So I was just saying that the boundary, the auxiliary spin chain,
yes,
the states are not orthogonal in the way you think.
Oh, they are, no? On the boundary, I mean, I have a basis. I have a basis which is orthogonal. It's just set by, you know, what the virtual degrees of freedom are on every side. I think it's just orthogonal.
Different choices of the virtual index don't correspond to states that are orthogonal in the bulk.
Ah, in the bulk, yes. No, sure. Yeah. Yes.
That's what you use.
Okay. Yes.
Exactly.
So can I? So you said the projector is independent of the state. What? So presumably you mean once you kind of fix the nature of these guys that is what independent of the topological sector or like what?
No. It's actually, you know, what this projector is doing is just implementing the parity. You know, so it projects actually. You see, there is this initial condition when you construct the state. So this projector actually project on the correct parity of the topological sector. So if I compute the boundary term for this in this ground state, then I would project, this P will project on the even sector of the virtual subspace. So it's something which is universal. And if I look, take the other ground state, then the projector will be the complementary one. It will project on the odd sector. So the way actually we construct H local is we actually add the two terms, because you know these for two topological sectors the projectors are just complementary. So when you add them up, you just get the local Hamiltonian. So this is the way how we compute it. Right. So maybe I'm almost finished. So I will skip the magnetic field stuff maybe. And what I want to do is maybe skip a lot. What I want to do here is maybe tell you a little bit about our recent search, which is trying to construct with this PEPS formalism chiral spin degree, which would be topological. And we've been very much motivated by the original construction by Camille Laughlin, which constructed, you know, a bosonic analog of the fractional quantum Hall state a long time ago, and also recent calculation by Bella Bauer, who is here, and company, who actually found that if you take the Kagome lattice and add this chiral perturbation on the triangle, so this term is actually a triple product of the three spins on every triangle, and you sum them over all triangles. So this term is basically SU2 invariant. It's a singlet, and it has some chirality. And by doing numerical calculation, they found that this state is actually a topological chiral spin liquid, and they have some evidence, for example, from the entanglement spectrum. that they draw in the for the two ground state they find, and what they see here is something very similar to what you find in simple a fractional quantum Hall wave function with chiral modes, which can be very well described by some simple conformal field theory. So this is really evidence that this model sustained this chiral spin liquid. So we actually tried very hard to construct simple chiral spirometry and by using the PEPS formalism. And we come up with some idea which is actually very simple, is basically to play with the local tensor. So what we want to do is we want to construct a state which under, so here it's on the square lattice. This is our first try on the square lattice, but I think it can be exported to the Kagome lattice. So the idea is basically to construct a state which under any reflection will go into time reversed partner. So it will. So that's a complex wave function that go into its complex conjugate when I do any reflection on the lattice. So I want to have a wave function which would have the real part which transform like an S wave, and imaginary part like would transform like a G wave if you want. And then under any reflection, it would just pick up a minus sign. So that's minimal requirement for a chiral state. And then we can do actually by playing with a tensor. So the tensor we construct with, you know, this tensor would have D plus ID symmetry. And so I mean it has a real part which transforms as dx squared minus y squared, and it has some imaginary part that transforms like dxy. So if I implement that, then I will automatically get this property for the wave function. And if you restrict to d equals 3, you know, bond dimension 3, you can exactly get, you know, all these ansatz with the additional condition that the state should be a singlet. Okay, so you want really to have a spin liquid state. So we managed to construct these states, and what we get at the end of the day is actually four in a state which has four topological sector. So the entanglement entropy seems to, so that's only for one sector I show here, seems to follow the Era law with a finite intersect here that we're not been able to compute accurately because of finite size effect. And it has also chiral edge mode. So here I show the entanglement spectrum in various sectors of the reduced density matrix, which can be block diagonalized in terms of SZ sector. So these SZ sectors are shown here. And as a function of the momentum along the cat. So this is KY is a momentum along the cat. And it shows actually quite nicely some linear dispersion of some chiral edge modes. So at the moment, we are trying to figure out whether we can, you know, interpret this as in terms of conformal field theory. But it's not completely because, you know, you have finite size effect and the system are kind of small. And the other thing that you get in this wave function is actually it gives a infinite correlation length. So that's maybe not clear whether in this case you can interpret the edge modes as with a conformal field theory. So that there's a lot of a question about this wave function, but
is it correlation length in the bulk?
Yes.
Of the spins. So,
what?
Infinite correlations of the spins, like 2K.
No, we're not looking at special operator. You know, with these techniques, we can look at the transfer matrix. So we look at the spectrum of the transfer matrix, and that gives, you know, the correlation length in every sector without having to refer to any operator in a way. So we can look at the correlation in the triplet sector, in the singlet sector, but we don't know which operator will correspond. So this is a maximum correlation length we can get. Yes.
So, but that's infinite correlation in a one-dimensional, quasi-one-dimensional system, and the orthogonal direction is compact.
Yes, exactly. So what we do is we calculate the correlation length or the gap in the transfer matrix for a given width as for infinite cylinder, and then we try to extrapolate the result as a function of the perimeter of the cylinder. But this is this extrapolation which is difficult, because basically we have, you know, perimeters of size 4, 6, 8, 10. Okay, and that's, but in the horizontal direction it's infinite. So we have some data which seems to suggest that indeed the correlation length is infinite, that the transfer matrix spectrum is gapless. Okay, so I think beyond my time, so I would like to summarize. So what I tried to show you that simple wave function approach can be quite useful to understand, to give a conceptual understanding of simple correlated phase of matter. So we have also the example related to superconducting, unconventional superconducting states, for example, which might have something to do with the ITC superconductors. There are many examples of simple phases we can construct. The good thing also is that there is a systematic improvement which can be made for physical Hamiltonian, so we can actually construct PEPS wave function by some optimization techniques. This is the IPEPS formalism, which has many similarities with DMRG in a way. And there are a number of many issues related to this Carol PEPS, which I think is really interesting recent development, whether they can really describe the ground state of physical Hamiltonian, and whether also PEPS, Carol PEPS, can describe really gapped Carol spin liquid with finite correlation lines. So there are many issues which remains to be answered on this front. Okay, thank you. Thank you very much.